This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
AKA Feathers. I mean, do you even need to announce your name anymore? Like, do you have to say it's Megan from Featherstone Nutrition, or can you just say it's Feathers?
I just don't know that I'll ever call myself Feathers. I'm okay with other people calling me it, so I don't know that I'll ever be like, hi, I'm Feathers.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe someday. I guess I should never say
that. That's a shame. I think you got to take advantage. Like, Prince, do you think the first time he's like, yeah, you call me Prince? Like, it felt a little awkward, but then it became, like, a great name to have one name. Like, Madonna. Like, she's like, and people are like, Madonna what? And she's like, nah, just Madonna. You got to embrace it. Just be like, Feathers, I'm Feathers.
Okay. Give me some time. I need to work on the embracing.
What other nutritionist at all ever in the history of nutritionists, of your boring ass
profession?
Profession. What other one has made themselves a rock star like you have? Like, just be like, I'm Feathers. Start giving out boas at races and stuff like that. Like, embrace the stardom.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, T. Hype me up. I need it.
Yeah. You have the ability to be a rock star.
Yeah, we're recording this 2 days after the Boston Marathon. Megan's leaving for London this afternoon. It's complete chaos, but we're getting it done.
Do you know what we should do? We should probably put this on, like, double speed when we play it back so that it sounds like we're less tired than we are.
Okay. Maybe we'll do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I know we all listen to other people's podcasts on like 1.2, 1.4. You don't, Thomas? Yeah.
Oh, I do.
I don't think you could listen to ours. I talk kind of fast. Like, I'm curious if anybody can listen to ours like rapid speed.
That would be funny.
Well, you speak quickly, but also this is like educational. So it's like you kind of want to make sure you're grasping what it is.
But I do like it because you're from the Midwest and a lot of rappers from the Midwest are like,
is that what it is?
Definitely. Yeah. My heritage is rapping from rappers.
Yeah, I could tell that. I can tell you come
I got
from
that.
A long
That's the vibe
line
I got.
Of musical
Slim
lyricists.
Shady?
Okay. Wow. So we're going to chat about the Boston Marathon since that's fresh in our minds. Talk about how we change things a bit for the weather in terms of nutrition and hydration, and then answer some of the questions that I know you got, Megan, about like what people could have done that maybe didn't have the best day.
Damn it. What would you do?
What was that? Was it Ralphie or something?
Was it your bag?
Taking a tumble.
Yeah. Underneath your bag.
I don't know. Everything's fine.
So listen to this.
Yeah.
How much fun was it seeing the people in Boston?
Oh, my gosh.
Like actually seeing people.
Okay. So think about when we first started and we did our shakeout with ASICS and we were like, let's take like the fuel for the soul. Let's take bagels. And we had, I don't know, 300 people, maybe? Mm-hmm. And we were like, this is the best. And then last year we had what? Like 500 or 600 people? This year? We freaking needed a permit to close down the street. I've never seen so many people in my life. I've never been more overwhelmed in my life, but it was amazing.
We had about
it was the best.
I loved it because it was just complete chaos. But there was over 1,000 people. You know, it was nice that just meeting people that listened to the podcast. You could tell like people had specific things that they were wanting to share with us that they had either heard on the podcast or, you know, Believe in the Run or Featherstone Nutrition, whatever it was. I feel like our stuff together just brings the best people together because you get the shoe nerds, the nutrition nerds, the hardcore runners.
Runner nerds.
Yeah. It's the best. But
our people are the best people. I seriously am so thankful for any of you guys that are listening that came out because I don't know if I was a solitary runner, if I would have the courage to come out to an event as big as ours was. So thank you all for being brave and coming out and saying hi and getting questions answered and eating bagels with us. And shout out to Goldilocks Bagels, where we got all the bagels from for the shakeout.
Those were the freshest.
They're so good.
Like when normally you do like a group run like that, usually get like bagels that are a little hard, a little stale, not that great. I ended up eating like four of those bagels at the thing because they were so good. They were like, I don't know. They need to do a contract with ASICS because I don't want any other bagel after having that one there.
And what did they tell us about the owners of Goldilocks? Like their dad is like a Boston Marathon run streaker or something. There's some connection to the running world with the bagel shop too. So that was extra cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think we ate all of them. I think they were gone by the end of the shakeout run.
I got half of one. And that was it. They were gone. I was like, are there
same?
Well, that's what I was doing.
They were gone.
I was grabbing halves because they had halves. They had it cut four ways. So in half and then in half.
Yeah.
So. I also, every time, so Thomas got me half of an everything one. Mm-hmm. And I would like take a little bite. And then at that moment, someone was like, hey, can I get a, and I'm like chewing. And I'm like, there's definitely stuff in my, like seeds in my teeth. Yeah. And it was like a whole thing, but totally worth it. Yeah.
Carved up.
Okay. So anyway, so thank you everyone who came out to the Shakeout Runs or any of our events this past weekend in Boston. It really means a lot. And if you said hi out on the course or were cheering out on the course, also love that. So thank you to everyone.
It's really great to see the people who are actually listening.
Yeah.
You guys are the best.
Okay. So T, let's chat quickly about Boston Marathon, how it went for you, how you fueled, how you felt.
I think it went as well as it possibly could. I'm not someone who does well in the heat. I think Coach Caster got me really fit, which was our goal, like to show up to the start line. I had a little bit of a goal to go a lot faster than I did, which I felt like with my training was doable. But when the heats and the temperatures get up there, you kind of just have to take what the day will give you. What I did do was nail all my Featherston nutrition pre-work and then on the course, really tackled nutrition and hydration aggressively.
Okay, so what did you do the day before in terms of hydration?
So the day before, I made sure I was always drinking. Like I was pretty much always had some fluids in my hand and was drinking. We sat down after the shakeout run. We shut down. We went, got some food at Prest, went back to the hotel room and just chilled. And the whole day I was just sipping on like Element, and I took some Gatorade because I knew that was going to be on the course, drank that up, and just really concentrated on making sure I was getting the carbs in. We were eating we had a bag of pretzels by the bed, watching movies, and I had three or four Goldilocks bagels at the shakeout. For lunch, we stopped and we got some stuff at the Press Cafe, which I recommend because it's got a little bit of everything, and it's right there in Copley. And then the day of, I had for breakfast, we did, I think I went to Starbucks because you were going early. So I went out with you, made sure you were taken care of. You forgot sunglasses, so I got to pop out again.
You know, it's funny. I forgot my sunglasses and I realized it on the walk to the buses in the morning. And I was only a few minutes from the hotel and I was like, is it worth it to get sunglasses? And I was like, it's going to be sunny. It's going to be worth it. And I met Thomas, brought them down to me. We met like a block away from the hotel entrance and he handed them to me. And when I turned around, I ran into Allie Feller and I was like, aww. I wouldn't have seen Allie and I wouldn't have gotten a hug from Allie if I hadn't forgotten my sunglasses. So I was like, it'll be a good day. I was trying to see all the like little silver linings of the day.
And you ended up getting in with Ben at the bus. So everything worked out.
Yep.
But so I did that and I pretty much, so that was kind of like almost like a little mini full breakfast. I also had at the room, I had a cranberry muffin that I got the day before and a bagel from the place. I really didn't feel like eating, but I was like, you're going to like this later.
Well, and Megan made you eat the muffin first. Megan, why?
So we were in the grocery store and Thomas is like, what do I need in the morning before my race? And he's like, I want a muffin. And I'm like, okay, Thomas, you can have a muffin. And he's like, I want to eat the muffin in Athlete's Village. I was like, no, it's too high in fat. You have to eat that for breakfast number one. And then he kept getting confused. So I was waiting to hear, like, did we actually execute the muffin as part of breakfast number one with the bagel? And then the Hawaiian rolls were supposed to be in the village. Did we get it?
I didn't wait till the village. I ate the Hawaiian rolls on the bus.
On the bus. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I also, when I got to the thing that where I deviated from the plan a little bit, which I knew that you would approve of, was when I got to the village, I was like, I'm hungry. Like, I'm feeling a little bit hungry. I'm going to take one of my gels. I know that they have Morton out on the course. Mm-hmm. I'll be able to replace. So almost immediately when we got to the village, and I still had like an hour to go, I took one of the...
Morton's.
No, I was using...
Untapped.
I took one, and believe it or not, as we were walking up to the start, I was like, screw it, I'm having another one.
Good. And
so I took another one on the way to the start. The thing that was crushing was I thought we were going to get clouds. Mm-hmm. And it was... blue sky, laser beam, sunshine, and
the whole way.
And it didn't feel like there was much wind when we were even waiting in the village. I just felt like that I was sweating before we started. Like I was laying on the ground and I'm just like, I felt like I was at the beach suntanning. For the race, pretty much, except for the first water stop, I hit every water stop and I did two cups. I did one in the mouth, one over the head at every stop. And I didn't use Gatorade until mile 20 is when I started using that. So so I took my last gel at mile 24.
Oh, wow. That's good.
Yeah.
And I think so I ended up having 8 gels that day because I brought 6 with me, took 2 good early, and then grabbed 2 more. Yeah. And I did it every 4 miles pretty much. Yeah.
So I have a question because I was obviously tracking you guys all at the finish and I noticed pretty early that your projected pace was slower than you had trained for. So I'm assuming that from the get-go, you were like, we're just going to adjust from the start. Did you feel like you did that? Because it seemed like your pace was steady. Like you didn't fall off like some people did.
Well, here's
hand.
If you look at it, I did fall off at the end, but no, here's the plan. The plan was, so when starting as back as far as we did, you know that you're in congestion. So the coach was like, don't worry about that. If you go out at a 9:40 pace, don't worry about it. You'll be able to make it up later. Now, we ended up going out closer to like an 8-something pace. I forget, but it was still very conservative, like 8:40 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to do more of a progressive. So like if you looked at the cherry blossom the week before where I started in like 8:20 and we dropped down to 7:40s. Like that was like the goal was to.
That's always the goal in a marathon, and that never happens. Like I've yet to see someone perfectly execute a progression run to the best of their abilities, like all out racing.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I felt like if I had run what we did at Cherry Blossom, it would have been fantastic. So
yeah. Would have been, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. To execute that in the marathon is crazy hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in Boston with the hills and stuff.
That was the thing. It's like you have, it's not a normal race course where you're like, okay, here's mile 5. Now let's drop it down to this pace because it's so effort-based. Like it's rolling hills, it's this and that. So you're just like, okay, let's knock up the effort. Somebody asked if New York was tougher or this one was tougher. And actually, Robbie responded and said he felt New York was tougher because wasn't as tough because we trained through the summer. And so you just got a hot day. Where this one, we've been training in 30, 40 degree weather. And then you get there, and the start of this race for me was over 60 degrees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what chatterings at the finish line was. You know, typically Boston's carnage is between like 18 and 21 in the middle of the hills for people who went out too fast. And we kept hearing that the carnage was starting at 14. And I was like, oh, before the hills even hit, I was just like, this is. So you guys saw that too. I was like, this is not good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so hard.
A record number of people go to the hospital. This
oh, I'm sure. And we can talk about the finish line because I had quite the view of all the people coming in. But it was scary. Yeah.
It was so hard too to see that at so early in the race because it's like, I mean,
well, it's discouraging when you're suffering a little bit and you see people stopping to walk and it's like, dude, it's way too early. Like these aren't even the hills; these are just little rollers, and you're like, you're walking these rollers. It's like it's gonna be a long day.
Yeah.
And I do like I think from my perspective. At the finish line watching people come in. And I mean, there was just a line of wheelchairs, just like, and there was a physician just standing there going, come here, wheelchair after wheelchair after wheelchair after wheelchair. Like, and it seemed to be like at the end of wave one, and then it looked a little better as the stronger runners from wave two were coming through. And then you saw it again. But, you know, I think one of the questions we got was, how much do you think the weather impacted performance at Boston? And when we look at the research, any weather over 60 degrees is where we start to see performances impacted, which doesn't sound that hot to a lot of us. But to Thomas's point, when we're coming off of a cold winter of training, our body isn't even slightly adjusted to running in that. So a 60 degree day in October might be very different for a lot of us who live in a colder climate in the winter than a 68 degree day or whatever it ended up being with full sun in April, when none of us have run in that yet. So I think it was just, I applaud anyone out there who got through it, A, and then B, you know, really applaud people who were smart and took a step back and slowed down and were a little more conservative to take care of our bodies, because there was plenty of people coming across the finish that had clearly not done the things they needed to do to keep themselves safe. And I know things like that can happen even when we do the right things, but it's just a reminder to all of us, like, listen to our body, take care of our body, make the adjustments. If that means slowing down, there's always another race. So it was pretty crazy out there.
I saw tons of people with like salt streaks, like whether on the side of their face or on their clothing, like there was people losing sodium out there.
Yeah. When I got back to shower, it was like, I felt like a salt lick. Like I was like, how did all of this, where did this come from?
I like it when I'm showering and you taste it in your mouth. Yeah. Because like it's coming
salt
down.
Salt water.
All right. There we go.
And I did my normal, like we always do, Meg and I carried my bottle. I had scratch in it. And I never regret doing that. Every time I carry a bottle, I am so grateful that I did, because number one, it was so nice to be running in the beginning when everyone's panicking to get to the Gatorade or the water because you had to, because it was so hot, and I could just run down the center with my bottle. Like that in itself was amazing. And then also it was like anytime I got thirsty, which was more frequent than even the water stops, even though they're every mile, I could just take a sip. And so I really feel like that saved me. I still had a really tough day and I did not run well, but it was like, it's what got me to the finish line for sure, is hydrating early and taking a bottle. And
see, I had the bottle and I thought I would go through it a lot faster, but I don't love, like, I put the Gatorade in it, concentrate that came in the bag, and I ended up throwing my the little handheld I was using away, because it had about a quarter of the fluid left in it, but I was just like, I can't take this anymore. It's too much. And then my hand was also hot from holding like a non-breathable rubber.
Yeah.
You know, like you've got a rubber silicone thing in your hand. I'm like, I'd rather.
I when I did throw my bottle at halfway and then I switched to just the water and Gatorade out on the course. Like I tried so hard. I even slowed down a lot to try and get, I can't do it. Like I need the bottle.
Well, by the end, the last few miles, it was so hot
and
stuff that I was like, if I lose 10 seconds at the water station, because I walk through to make sure I'm getting water in my mouth.
Worth it.
Somebody asked us, would either of you do anything differently in retrospect?
Yeah.
Like, is there anything you would do differently?
I would not run in 60 degrees heat. Like, like at some point I've got to start telling myself, it's just not going to be your day if you do that. There's no point. There's like, I would rather be flying out to London with you right now.
Yeah. I don't know what I could have done differently, especially in terms of fueling. Like I got every gel in, I drank as much as I could out there on the course. I even, yes, my splits were very positive, but I didn't even go out that hot. Like I went out at what felt comfortable because it's downhill in the beginning and I'm very much a downhill runner. And so the paces were like fine. They weren't like I went out so hard and I blew up like I did at CIM. but it was just a tough day. And it was hot and I sort of adjusted based on the heat. Like I just, my body slowed down. I didn't think I was slowing down, but my body slowed down.
That was the thing. Like when you said it was even splits, I'm running harder.
The effort level stayed very consistent for the first half and my paces got just gradually slower and but it felt the exact same to me. Like I wasn't looking at my watch cause I was like, whatever, this is just a day. But if you had asked me if my pace had changed for the first 13 miles, I would have said no. Yeah. Very consistent.
See, and I always said I sped up.
Right. And I think that speaks volumes because you guys have both run so many marathons, you know? So we have to push time expectations to the side when it's weather that we are not used to running it. I had somebody that I've worked with that trains in Texas that was 2 minutes off his goal and ran a 2:32. So some people do better in this heat, but that's not the majority. That is not the majority. Most of us really have to be careful and slow down. Somebody asked, how do you not get heat stroke through nutrition and hydration? And I think it's good to talk about, like you both said, you followed the plan, you did what you needed to do to hyperhydrate, you fueled well in the morning, you hydrated early in the race, you continued to hydrate, you took all your gels, and your pace still slowed. So I had a lot of people reaching out a little bit discouraged that I did everything right and I still didn't hit my goals at Boston. And we just, we can't when it's this warm. We have to adjust expectations. I know it stinks, but
I ran.
Yeah. Good.
Like, I'm still glad. Like, I love the course. Like, it's funny. I fun ran it last year because it was right on the heels of Tokyo. And my time was virtually the same. Mm-hmm. And this time it was grueling. And both Megan and I think, or at least I was talking with Robbie, it felt like a completely different course in the different conditions. Like, last year, it was rainy, windy, and gray. And it was like one of those things where you just like, let me get to the fireplace as fast as possible and put my feet up. And this one was more of like, wow, it's a bluebird day. Like, it was beautiful. Like, if you were a spectator,
fantastic. It was a beautiful spectator weather. Let me tell you, it was lovely. I've never seen more people in Boylston. I mean, there was like 25 people deep on each side of Boylston. It was a spectacle, like something that I kept telling the crew I was with, this is a core memory. Like, you know, it was just to be a spectator, but to run it, it was a death march for a lot of people.
Just some cloud cover would have been helpful, but the course looked different. Like,
because I've run this course now 4 times, it's pretty vivid in my memory. Like the miles, especially like the big miles, like when I know the downhill's coming, or I know the hills are coming, or I know, like, there's specific things that stick out to me. And I remember hitting different like memorable spots and being like, wow, I feel so much worse than I did this time last year.
Aww. Yeah.
And which was probably not the best idea, but it was hard not to think, wow, right. This is just hard. It's just different. It's harder. It's just, you can't control the weather. It's what it is.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Let's answer some people's questions about warm races in general. So, how does heat change fueling needs and strategy? Like, what does someone need to adjust?
Yeah. So, you know, we talked heading into this when we realized that it might be a little bit warmer, and then it ended up being even warmer than we thought it was going to be when we woke up. So, you know, when we can expect that this weather is warmer than my body is used to performing in, which might be a different temperature for everybody, we want to make sure that we're A, carb loading, because when we're fully carb loaded, we're creating glycogen in our muscles, and glycogen is just carbohydrates with water. So we actually store an additional like 30 ounces of water just by being fully carb loaded. So that's going to help us from a hydration perspective. And then we've talked a lot about increasing sodium the night before and the morning of the race, because that's going to, just like when we eat a salty dinner and wake up in the morning and our hands are swollen, it's going to allow us to hang on to some extra fluid. So we can hang on to an extra liter or two of fluid by carb loading, and then also hyperhydrating, increasing sodium while we're increasing fluid. So we can go into the race with extra fluid so that we don't get quite as dehydrated quite as early. So a lot of it then is our personal sweat rate. So heavier sweaters are going to perform worse because we're going to hit our threshold of dehydration that negatively impacts performance much, much sooner than someone who doesn't sweat quite as much. So, you know, watching the ponytails and the men like run in, like who was sweaty, who wasn't, like some people were literally still completely dry on their face and on their head. And it was like, those people just aren't heavy sweaters. So they probably were able to perform a little bit better out there. So I think that hydration piece and making sure that we're going into it very well hydrated and not just like chugging water, that can actually be a detriment to our performance because it's going to dilute the sodium in our body. We want more sodium, more fluid, so that we're really hanging on to both of those elements. And we got some questions about like, you know, I felt awful. Did I need more sodium? So, you know, there's only so much we can do from a sodium and hydration standpoint. When we hit a certain point of dehydration, performance is going to decrease. And really what that's related to is when our core body temperature starts to climb, that's when we start to not feel good. And when we get dehydrated, that core body temperature climbs even more because we have trouble dispersing heat out of our body. So really when we saw people collapsing, you know, most of it was hyperthermia. They were just way too hot. So that can relate to poor hydration or awesome hydration with a terrible sweat rate and not being used to the weather. So there's all sorts of elements in here, and everybody's kind of going to kind of display things differently on race day. But really what it comes back to is doing our best to minimize how dehydrated we're getting out there. And then two, pulling back effort. I'm a dietitian, I'm not a run coach. So like the effort piece is a little bit out of my scope, but I think it's important to mention if we go out too hot, if we try to hit paces, our core body temperature is going to skyrocket way too soon. And that's when we're going to get into issues too. So it's a hydration piece, but then it's also managing expectations as far as pace go to be smart to finish this race without overheating.
So quick question for you. Both Megan and I typically, after a marathon, I don't feel that beat up. You know, we train properly. Mm-hmm. We're good to go. Yeah, there's a little fatigue after, especially a hard effort. I don't recall feeling this beat up after a marathon in a long, long time. And Megan normally to me is like an iron, you know, like robot. It's like nothing bothers her. And both of us are just wrecked. Mm-hmm. What is that from?
I think it's dehydration, honestly, because if you think about it, muscle recovery takes a lot of fluid, and muscle damage is also related to not only how hard we're working. So if perceived exertion is higher, that's going to do a little more damage. But then also just the whole dehydration piece is really, really hard on muscles and really kind of tears them up a little bit more. So I have to believe that that's why everybody is feeling so much more sore. Plus, we know the course is hard, but you guys have run it the past couple of years. So, Yeah. You know, comparatively, if you feel that much more sore this year, I know your fitness was as good, if not better, than years past. So, you know, we can definitely relate that to the hydration piece, you know, out there. It's going to take a little longer to recover.
I mean, and this is, and for the people listening who had a tough day out there, this is the hardest part about the marathon thing, is that you train for months and this is the day and this is what you're dealt. Mm-hmm. So it's, we all want to be like, and I'm guilty of this in the past. I've kind of loosened my grip on it a little bit. Being so hung up on the end result time being the determiner of whether or not it was a good marathon. And I look at it now and I think it's funny because I was with Megan during her whole journey to sub-3. Like, I remember all those times where she was close and not hitting it. And all we wanted was at 3:59. And now Megan gets
two.
Working so hard, and find like now she gets a 2:59 and she's like distraught and
on a bad horrible. Day.
It's a bad day. And it's nice to see the growth, but it's also like, that's totally badass that you're able to run a sub-3 hour marathon in conditions that we could not train for. Like there was no, unless we cranked up the heat in the house and did all the workouts on the treadmill. And I tried to, but then we wouldn't have the hills. But I tried to also, you know, I felt like going in mentally, I was like, it's warmer than you like it. Mm-hmm. You trained hard though. Your fitness is good. And I did some work on the treadmill. You were fine. You were able to hold paces. So I was like, you're going to be okay. So I went in as positive and open-minded. I did not go in with a, hey, it's 60 something degrees, you're going to die today mentality. Mm-hmm. I went out there thinking, hey, you can do this. You can push through.
Yeah. I got the vibe from a lot of these questions from people too, was that they felt like they had done something wrong, that they finished thirsty and dehydrated, and they must not have nailed their hydration because they felt this way because their paces were slow. And this is what I do for a living. This is what this podcast is about, nutrition and hydration for performance. But it can only do so much. We really can only take in about 24, 25 ounces of fluid an hour. And most of us can't even quite get that in when we're running at marathon pace. Some of us are losing 40 to 50 ounces an hour at that weather. Like, it's just, it's impossible to run a race in that type of weather and finish hydrated. Plus, the goal is never to finish a marathon well hydrated. We should all be dehydrated. We're all going to be thirsty, but we want it to be to a point that doesn't impact performance. And the weather this weekend just, it was too extreme for most people to be able to manage our losses by how much our body could physically take in while we're running at that effort, which means our paces are going to suffer, and that's okay. Like that's, so I guess anybody who's feeling like they didn't do something right with their nutrition or hydration because of how they felt or what happened out there, sure, it's possible we need to make some little tweaks, but I just want people to know that we can do everything absolutely right and still not have the performance that we want, just because that's how hard running in the heat can be on our body for a lot of people.
Well, let me ask you a question, Meg. You ran CIM. And that was a tough one. Like you were stacking on top of stacking. We had business trip and it just wasn't your day, but we kind of knew that it was a gamble.
Yeah.
Now you come back to Boston and you have another tough day. Does this change anything mentally for you? Or are you just like, oh, that's just the day? Like how does it affect you?
No, I mean, I'm already thinking about Berlin and that it's a flat course and there's another chance to run fast. And I mean, I can't dwell on it because otherwise I'd never mm-hmm. get back to training and run again. I mean, my body feels like trash and I don't want to run right now, but mm-hmm. I'm mentally, I'm like, it was a race that didn't go well, but I'm
ready to go that. Again. I love that about you. I think that mm-hmm. your attitude towards it is fantastic. I know that coming off of New York where I had such a horrible performance and, you know, obviously it's hard to run well when you can't breathe. But it did have an effect on me. And even though this one went sideways from where I wanted the goal to be, I still felt like it was a win considering the conditions.
Yeah.
And it is, we don't want to judge ourselves against other people, but misery does love company. And seeing that there was a lot of people out there that maybe had goals that went out the window, you kind of are able to like take a step back and say, hey, this isn't necessarily because of anything I did or a failure mm-hmm. on my part. This is the game. This is what happens when temperatures get up there. So anybody listening who feels discouraged or a little down about the performance, because I know that we get amped. It's a big stage, the Boston Marathon. Everybody wants to know how you did at Boston and all that stuff. But I don't think that you should judge this one strictly on time. I think that if you went out there and you gave it your effort and you didn't give up and you crossed that finish line, you should be proud of yourself.
And you stayed safe, you know, like hydration to me mm-hmm. was like keeping people safe out there at this race. Right. So, you know, there's a lot of wins involved, but yeah, we're also time-based. It doesn't feel like that all the time.
Okay. Let's answer a few more of these questions related to the weather. So how do you decide how much water versus electrolyte liquids to take out there?
So part of it's going to be what you practice with, but like we always say, you need carbs, you need sodium, you need fluid. So we need to be getting all three of those things. So if you're getting your sodium and your carbs from somewhere else and you prefer water, that's fine. If your gels don't have much sodium, we need to be getting it through a drink. So it's kind of that balance, right? And then this was kind of a question that kept coming up with people, like how much is enough? Did I do it right? Mm-hmm. Did I take enough? So I would say anywhere from like 10 ounces to 24 ounces an hour, which is a huge, huge range.
That's a lot.
And that's why we practice. And that's why the longer we've been marathoning, the better we get, because we start to know our body. Like when it was warm on that summer run, I needed to refill my bottle this many times. So we want to be taking some inventory as we head into the summer of how did I feel my best from a fueling, from a sodium, from a hydration standpoint. Most runners don't take enough hydration when they're out there. So if you feel like you're somebody who sweats a lot and you're trying to nail this, like how much fluid do I need? How much sodium do I need? The summer is the perfect time to try it. I often hear like, oh, I don't want to carry my handheld, or oh, it's a pain to refill it. We need to be playing with this so that we know what to do when we are thrown a day that's hotter than we want it to be. And then we can set some hydration goals, you know, throughout there. So, you know, starting with a minimum of 10 to 12 ounces of something that has sodium in it or a high sodium gel with water would be a great place for this person to start. And then just kind of notice, you know, throughout training, how much more we need, just depending on how sweaty we are.
What is it about the hot weather? Because normally if it's hot, I lose my appetite. But in racing, if it's hot, I tend to increase the need for carbs and stuff. What is that? Why is that a correlation?
In temperature extremes, we torch our glycogen stores faster. So in the really cold and in the warmth. So we're burning through those glycogen stores faster, which is what's helping us, you know, turn those carbs into energy quickly. So if you were so astute to notice, I need more carbs, you know, that was very, very true. So
thinking through like, okay, what do I do with that knowledge is if we're not used to taking gels more frequently and just because it's hot, we start doing it, that might not sit well in our stomach either. But it's just, again, good to know that we do torch more. That's why we want to make sure we go in carb loaded. And that's why we want to practice taking gels more frequently instead of less frequently. So our body is used to being able to do that, you know, as we move forward. And somebody had mentioned like my stomach was sloshing so bad. What did I do wrong? Right. So that can be a side effect of getting too hot. Our stomach just kind of stops emptying. Our blood flow is really trying hard to cool us down, and there's just too much in our stomach and it's not emptying and it's sloshing, sloshing, sloshing. So that we could do that if we drink too much too fast, if we take too many gels and our body's not used to it. But then also part of it is just a product of it being warmer out there. So, you know, again, like I think this is just a great lesson for all of us as we head into the heat of the summer that we're playing around with these things. So we're ready for, you know, when we are thrown a day like this.
Yeah. I like this question too, because I'm very curious of the answer. So they said, I felt like I couldn't recalibrate my fluid and nutrition mid race. Is it possible to reset like in the middle of your race?
So, you know, obviously that's why the whole early and often chant is often talked about here. So that when we hopefully don't get to that point, and if we do, maybe we're going to be okay. But when I read that question, I was like, what would I have done if I felt like, holy crap, I'm only halfway through, you know, my hydration sucks, my nutrition sucks. I honestly think I would have stopped for a moment at a water station, drank not a crazy amount, but enough, taken a gel and gotten my heart rate to come down a little bit. So usually when we can't tolerate things, we're overheated, our heart rate is too high. So if we can just chill for a moment, I think we could quote unquote recalibrate our GI tract to be like, okay, I can use this. I'm going to process this, which I know none of us want to stop, right? It's like, I don't want to stop in a race. But if we truly get to that point and we think it's effort related, then I really do think we somehow got to get that heart rate down. So whether it's slowing down the pace dramatically for a mile or stopping for a moment, you know, getting that perceived exertion and that heart rate down is what's going to be key to then tolerating the nutrition and hydration for the rest of the race.
Yeah. How do you know, like when you, I know sometimes I feel nauseous out on the course and I don't know if it's from my nutrition or from lack of nutrition. Like, is there any cues that it's like, hey, you need more water or you need more sodium or you need more carbs or less, or like your body's just not going to deal with it?
That's a hard one, because nausea oftentimes is dehydration, lack of sodium. So a little bit of sodium can help with it. But two, like if our body is just not tolerating fuel, we could feel super nauseous and like nothing's going to help at that point. Again, bringing our heart rate down might help a little bit. But it's definitely a tricky one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I do want to say this person said the carb load and salt load saved me. Strongest I have felt and no wall was hit. That's amazing. I will also say, while we are, for majority of us, this weather was going to negatively impact our performance, there are some people who aren't as affected. We had a friend, Nick, who ran a 229, which was a PR for him and on this day.
Floberg.
And ran a 238. So like, I don't want to totally discourage people and say, you can't have a good day. It's just to be conscientious and make sure that you're doing all the things that you can.
Yeah, and Nick's from Pittsburgh, so it's not like he didn't have like that.
Yeah, he's just a monster.
Texas blood or Arizona blood in him.
And that's what we see, though. I mean, look at the pros. Like, you know, seeing Emma come in, the first American, and shortly followed up by Sarah, and then Dez, really not that far behind. The three of them looked cute as a daisy coming through the finish line, you know? And it's just, some of us are okay in the heat.
When I finish a marathon, I'm covered in salt. I am too. And this person's asking if they're taking too much. That's not it, right?
No, not at all. And that's why I wanted to make sure we mention this. So because we're losing salt doesn't mean we're taking too much in. Like we talk a lot on here, you know, about how much sodium we lose like per pound of sweat and that it varies dramatically for a lot of us. So we can tell if we're a saltier sweater if we see a lot of salt on our body. That's genetic. It can change a little bit if we're more acclimated to the weather, but it's genetic. So if you see yourself covered in sodium, we need to take in more sodium. It's not a product of I over-sodiumed, right? It's more so our just genetic sweat composition.
Okay. Another salt question. They said, should I have upped my salt stick consumption even though I didn't need it in training?
That was a good one.
You probably weren't running in the heat.
Right. And when you're absolutely training. Absolutely. So, you know, we talk about nothing new on race day. So if somebody is like, well, I never trained with salt, yeah. How do I take it on race day? And for newer runners, that might be the case. But again, that's why we need to understand what does our body tolerate in the heat so that we know what to pull when we notice our race day is going to be warmer than we want to. Because yes, this person 100% needed to be adding sodium, even though they weren't in their training, if they were training in the cold.
Yeah. And then I've heard conflicting answers for this one, but someone asked, does it matter if you take large versus small sips of fluid?
I think we actually pulled a study on this one time, and it was like, if you take larger gulps of fluid, it's going to stimulate your stomach to empty faster than if you sip it, which it actually sounds kind of counterintuitive, right?
Yeah.
It was one study. So honestly, I would just go with what feels best to you. I can't imagine gulping fluids while I'm running. I feel like I would feel ill. I don't know if it's in my head or physical, so I always sip. But if you're somebody who doesn't mind gulping like four big old gulps at each, you know, aid station, then go for it. But again, practice, so you know what sits in your stomach the best.
Oh, okay. Actually, one final question about salt, because people were even talking about, there was like chatter of this on the bus ride up, where there was the salt tabs versus the salt chews. Mm-hmm. Versus just pouring it in your bottle. Like, everyone's like, what is the best thing I can do? So can you just explain the differences between those?
So it's just like, what's going to work for you? I had a client ask me the day before, can I open this salt cap and pour the salt in my mouth? And I was like, sure, you can. There's no reason you have to take it in cap form. But I was like, you know how sweaty your fingers are going to be? That gel cap's going to get stuck. You're never going to get it open. But so all that to say, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter whether it's in your drink, whether it's in a chew, whether it's in a cap. To me, I care more about like how much you're getting in. So the chews have 50 milligrams. The caps have like a little over 200, depending on the brand. Drinks can have up to 1,000, like the Element that Thomas loves, you know? So it just kind of depends on what works the best for you and how much you're getting in. But I honestly don't care where it comes from if it works for you.
Okay, so if someone has a hot race coming up, unfortunately, mm-hmm. The weather is not looking amazing. Megan, give them like three hot takes on what they should do to have the best day possible.
Hot tips. Like Nelly, you know. Anyway, so one, carb load. Two, increase your sodium, hyperhydrate the night before. And if your race starts after 7 a.m., do it in the morning again too. So that whole concept is going to have you hang on to some extra fluid. And then I want you to think about what you're doing during the race and start early. So have a goal of how much fluid you want to get in by the half. And then maybe the second half, we take it, you know, as we can on the course. Think about, how do we refill? Think about whether we want to carry that handheld. Think about what fluids are on course. Okay. So we're doing two things out of there. We're carb loading, we're hyperhydrating. Then during our race, we really want to have a hydration plan. Probably not something we've done in training, and maybe not in races where we can kind of just drink to thirst when it's cooler. So really have a plan of what you're going to do, what you're going to use, if you're going to carry, if you're going to refill. And what that might look like, as we were saying today, is more sodium and more fluid than you trained with if you trained in the cooler weather. So think about the products that work for you, play with the amounts, increase them if you need to, reach out if you need help with it. A lot of people very, very, very hesitant to increase sodium. In our society, sodium is bad. In a hot marathon, sodium saves our lives. So, you know, I think we need to make sure that we're getting enough fluid and enough sodium when we're out there. So we need to have that plan. And then to what you guys were saying, if we take our fuel and our gels a little bit earlier in the race, that's going to help us, since we are torching more of those glycogen stores. So have an extra gel, two gels on you in case you need to adjust and take a little more out there.
I didn't think about it because by taking them early, like starting the thing, my body was ready to digest those calories. Whereas mm-hmm. if I was overheating and on the course, it might have been a little tougher to get those down.
Right. So if you're taking those gels early, you're using those for energy and saving more of your glycogen stores for the end when you're unable to digest them quite as well. So it's a great, you know, tactic to use.
Perfect. And we're just hoping that you all have perfect race day weather and you don't have to worry about this. But mm-hmm. by chance, yeah. you do have a warm one. Make sure you practice all of this. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that wraps this one up. Thank you all for listening as always.
And I got some peas and carrots on the course.
If you have a question that we have not answered, send us an email at fuelforthesoulpodcast@gmail.com and we will answer it here on the show.
Yeah. There was a lady who walked by me and she was like, peas and carrots.
That's nice.
I love it.
All right.
All right, peas and carrots.
Bye.
Bye.
But anyway.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like, have you ever seen a parrot's tongue? I felt like that's what the inside of my mouth looked like. You know what I'm talking about?
What?
No.
I've never seen a parrot's tongue. Because I think you're recognizable.
Me?
There's something about you that's easy to recognize.
I'm tall. I stand above the crowd. They're like, oh, there she is. Yeah,
but people... Google a parrot's tongue right
okay,
now.
Or
there's no saliva in there, so it's just it's like...
Oh. Like dry. Paper, sandpaper.
It looks like a pinky in their mouth.
Ew.